Beyond Sin 396.
Hey there, welcome to the show. This is Beyond Synth. My name is Andy Last. I host the show, and today I am chatting with Minute Taker. That is correct, Ben. He makes cool music, and he did a collab with Walter Alienson last year called Reach Back Through Time, which is one of my favorite songs of last year. And anyway, it's just good stuff. I had fun chatting with him, and we're going to go to that in just a second. Just a few things to note. So we got some patrons to thank. Some new patrons. We've got Roman Kuzmenko in the Johnny Five Club. Thank you for your support. You are cool, Roman. And Erland Flatin. Is that how you say your last name? F-L-A-T-I-N. Erland, you let me know how to pronounce your last name. It looks like Flatin to me. Is also a new member of the Johnny Five Club. So thank you both for supporting the show. And the Axel Effect has upgraded his support. The Axel Effect did make a request and said he wanted me to play a song by LeBrock. So here's the deal, buddy. Stay tuned for next week's episode because it'll be a radio fiasco with Mike. And it just so happens that there is a LeBrock song on that chart. So I told Mike, I said, listen, the Axel Effect wanted me to play some LeBrock. I think there's a LeBrock collaboration with somebody else that is in the chart. So we can kill two McFlies with the same gun. All right. And we're going to do that. So you stay tuned. But thank you for supporting the show. And for all the rest of you, if you like the program, you can support Beyond Synth at patreon.com/Beyond Synth. And we are going to be putting more patron exclusive content on there. I know for many years, a lot of the awesome people who've been supporting the show have simply just been doing it for their love of the program or to simply support. But I have not done too much in the way of providing exclusive content. And so starting in the next few weeks, you're going to see a lot more stuff going up there for patrons. There's a series I'm recording with Color Theory where we're talking about Depeche Mode, just because we're big Depeche Mode fans, and we're just going to go through all the albums. There's going to be some bonus content with Mike. And also, for the past like 10 years of doing this show, what people don't realize is whenever I stop recording with a guest, oftentimes we end up talking for like another hour, like after we hit stop. And so I thought maybe I would start actually just keep rolling and then just also put that stuff up on the Patreon. The difference is it'll be less produced than an episode of Beyond Synth. So there might not be background music and I won't be throwing to songs. And it'll just be like a continuation of our conversation. But it's just sort of a way of thanking the patrons who have been here for so long and make sure that you guys get some exclusive stuff. Anyways, that being said, let's go to my chat with Minute Taker. All right, well, I'm here right now with Minute Taker, a.k.a. Ben. Is that correct?
Yes, hello.
How you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
I'm okay. So, as I just said before we started recording, I know your name is Ben, and that was all the research I had done. So, when I go into conversations with people, I just listen to the music, but I don't bother doing any background checks.
Okay.
Should I have done a background check? A police report?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, you don't know what you've let yourself in for.
Yeah, whatever. So what's going on today, man?
Oh, I've just been out with my dogs, with my friend, and just talking to you. That's about the extent of it.
Hey, well, that's not too bad.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Yeah, how about you?
Well, it's too cold today to go outside. I did have to drive my kids to school.
Where are you?
I'm in Canada.
Oh, right, okay.
In Ontario. But normally the weather's not supposed to be this cold, because when I was a kid, we had sort of distinct seasons.
Yeah.
And now that's gone. And so now, on the 21st, this is literally the second day of spring, and we just had a crazy snowstorm, and like the kids didn't have to go to school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's annoying, because you never know what to wear.
Yeah, it's a bit like that over here.
Yeah.
1 minute, you say, oh, it's finally spring's here, it's a nice sunny day, and then you go out and it just pisses it down.
Yeah, and that's the most annoying thing.
Yeah.
Not having your house flooded or you know, all this other shit. It's like, man, what the fuck jacket am I going to put on?
Yeah.
So I should say this, you've been making music for a long time, but I would say sort of your older stuff is kind of more like, I don't know, like almost like indie folk kind of rocky sort of stuff. Like how do you describe what you started making?
I always struggle to describe it. It was always really difficult to fit into a genre, but I suppose you'd say it's kind of alternative singer-songwriter kind of stuff, inspired by Tori Amos, Kate Bush, Bjork, those kind of artists. Yeah, but I've been much more in 80s synth mode kind of the last few years. My last album from 2022, Wolf Hours, is full-on synth. And my new album that I'm working on for this year is very kind of synthwave orientated.
See, that's what always gets me excited, because you know I love electronic sounding stuff and synthwave and retro stuff.
Yeah,
people can be making all sorts of music, but then once they dip their toes into this is where Andy gets excited.
Yeah, I'm the same. Yeah,
because I got to say this. I mean, we'll listen to it in a bit, but that track Reach Back Through Time.
Oh, yeah.
That you did with Walter Alienson. That's like mm-hmm. one of my favorite songs of last year.
Oh, thank you.
It is such a good song.
Oh, thanks.
And it's one of those ones that sort of crept up on me, because I think it must have been sent to me. Maybe it was at Aztec Records.
Yeah.
So basically people send me music and I just sort of throw it into my iTunes folder, and then when I'm doing chores or when I'm working or whatever, I just hit play on this thing, and every so often there'll be a song that pops in that it just sort of sneaks in, and I'm just kind of like, what is this song? And then you know I go away, and maybe it's like a few weeks later and it pops up again, and then all of a sudden I'm just like, what is this? And then that was going on with Reach Back Through Time. Was I sort of heard it the first time, I'm like, okay, and then it just grew on me and it just became like one of my favorite tracks, and I listened to it like a whole bunch. Like, it's just got a great chorus melody and line, and like the vocals and stuff, like it's such a fucking just a solid song.
Yes, thanks very much. I'm glad you like it. That one's the second collaboration me and Walter Alienson have done together. The first one was called Neon Lines, and we've got a few more in the pipeline as well.
I'm not really much of a articulate dude when it comes to explaining the things I like. It's just sort of like, well, that was cool, and if I find myself going back and listening over and over again, then it's very cool.
Oh, that's good then. Glad you like it.
So when did you like start making tunes?
Well, I started writing songs at our old battered piano, which was in our basement, probably when I was about 12 or 13, and I didn't know how to play it, so I just made things up and just went from there, really, and started producing things. My friend was producing my stuff when we were about 17, 18, and then taught me how to do it, so then I started producing my own stuff, and then went to college and uni to do contemporary music and did lots of kind of more experimental crazy stuff, and then came out of uni and started doing some, I suppose you'd say, experimental pop, and it just went from there, really. So it's been a good nearly 30 years since I started writing songs.
What does it mean to take contemporary music at university?
Well, actually, when I signed up, I basically thought I was signing up for pop music. And then I started it and realized that it was actually batshit crazy avant-garde kind of concept music, which took me a while to get my head around, but then I actually got really into it.
Is that like the pretentious stuff? I remember I met some dude who was doing some music thing in school, and he was doing like Music Concrete or whatever, where it was like just recording fucking building sites and stuff.
Loads of found sounds, and I still use quite a lot of found sounds in my songs, but they're much more pop music orientated these days. But yeah, it was very experimental, and often, you know, kind of you wouldn't really understand a song unless you read an essay about it kind of stuff. But it was fun. And useless.
Yeah, how did that work for the end of the year? Did you guys like present something?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of written stuff, essays and dissertation stuff, but also like end of year shows where you'd put on a performance with lots of sound and lights and stuff.
Do you get in trouble if you make a proper song in that chorus?
You probably just wouldn't really hit the points that you were supposed to address in the assignment. So I guess it would just probably wouldn't really work. I kind of veered that way a little bit in a couple of times.
Like, did they get mad at you? Like, I heard a chorus in that. Like, where's the grinding cement noises?
Yeah. it's very frowned upon. Yeah, frowned upon.
So then did that help you in terms of like the music you made going forward? Like, what does a university degree in contemporary music do for you?
Well, yeah, this was it. I mean, I came out with a good grade and then couldn't even get a job in a call center, you know, so it's completely useless in that respect. But I mean, you know, retrospectively, it did help me a lot. Like, it helped me a lot to kind of learn music production and And lots of other things, really. I think it was valuable, but I think the most valuable kind of music orientated education I've had is when I've done courses online, like in recent years, about marketing myself. Like, that's really been the most valuable stuff, actually taught me how to make money from my music.
Fuck, I should take a marketing course.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very useful. I wasn't really making any money from my music until about 7 years ago, and then I did a couple of courses about how to use Facebook and Instagram ads to reach like your target audiences, and that's kind of when I actually was able to give up my job and actually do music full time.
Well, that's pretty cool. I'm on sort of a money losing endeavor at the moment. So,
oh, I've been on plenty of those. Comes hand in hand with music.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, man, how about we listen to some music and then we'll keep chatting. So since I brought it up, we might as well just, we're going to go sort of in a funny order today. But this was the song that, you know, when I heard this, I was just like, well, this is just fucking great. It's called Reach Back Through Time, and it's by Walter Alienson and Minute Taker. This life's not what you want. You're not where you thought you'd be. It all got so damn complex. You got sucked into tired routine. You're feeling lost, you know what to do. The portal is open, he's waiting for you. When you can't find your spot, you can reach back through Right, and that was Reach Back Through Time by Walter Alienson and Minute Taker. I am here with Minute Taker right now. Ben.
Hello.
Because I've looked over sort of your discography. I don't see too many sort of collaborations. So, like, who is Walter Alienson and why is he your collab person recently?
Well, actually, we met on a synthwave group a few years ago. I'd recently got into synthwave in a big way, and I thought it'd be nice to do a collaboration. So I put a post on there, and he replied and sent me a couple of his instrumental tracks. And I was like, oh, wow, I really like these. And it just went from there, really. He's based in Costa Rica. We've never met in person. I'm in the UK. So yeah, it's just we've done a few songs together. He's signed with Aztec Records now. So the last one came out through them.
Because there's a lot of people obviously making like instrumental synthwave music. And it's almost like just a gift of luck when they just so happen to pair up with somebody who's also just a really good singer-songwriter. Because obviously there's a lot of people out there who sing as well and like who are shitty at it. And so I feel like it's a lucky thing.
I guess, but I mean, it's hard to find. Good instrumentalists as well as a singer. Like obviously I do my own instrumentation as well, but I really like when somebody sends me an instrumental track that I connect with and I get ideas for the, you know, the top line and the lyrics. It's fun to kind of not have to think about the music too much and just focus on doing the melodies and lyrics. And yeah, so it's good when those instrumentals come along that really spark the ideas, you know.
And what was the most useful thing you learned from that online marketing course?
God, so much. But basically just how to work out who my audience is, you know, who my niche is, and then how to reach them effectively with Facebook and Instagram ads. That was the crux of it, really. And it, I've kind of just built my whole little music business on that.
Yeah, that's probably something I should figure out. How do you figure out who your audience is?
Well, it's a lot of trial and error. A lot of kind of posting adverts and seeing the demographics of the people who respond to it.
What happens if your demographic turns out to be assholes?
Well, then you just need to figure out the best way to appeal to the assholes.
I guess. I don't want to be like audience captured. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, if I find out, just like, oh, my audience like sure hates some stuff, and then like go, maybe I should lean into that. Like, I don't want to do that. Like,
I'm guessing your podcast audience is not entirely dissimilar to my own audience. Probably like men over 30.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. In fact, I was just having this conversation with a listener. It's something that I'm thinking about lately because it's an interesting thing about the synthwave scene. The audience kind of comes at it sort of two different or, you know, multiple different ways. Yeah. But for me, I'm a guy who just, I love retro sounding stuff. You know, I grew up in the 80s. I like, I just like the synth sounds of that time.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's more, I like synthwave for the, it's like a love letter to nostalgia.
Yeah.
That's the what I like about it. However,
yeah,
there is also a contingent of people who I think they like synthwave because they hate modern stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so it's more like a, wasn't things were better in the 80s, right? You know, it's like that kind of attitude. So it's a different way of coming at it.
Yeah, I must admit, I've realized there's quite a lot of younger people who listen to synthwave, which at first I was a bit surprised about because I thought, isn't it about like kind of a nostalgic kind of connecting you to, you know, the warmth of and comfort of childhood in the 80s? So why would that appeal to people who weren't around in the 80s? But I think, there does seem to be quite a lot of younger people as well, which might partly be to do with the fact that, you know, 80s are quite kind of trendy at the moment, you know, with Stranger Things and kind of all,
yes,
all that, and lots of the kind of more synthy and synthwavy sounds kind of popping up here and there in the charts and stuff, you know. So yeah, maybe it could be related to that. But also I think it's just that even if people weren't around, they still really feel that sense of nostalgia for it and that comfort.
Yeah, and I think that's the sort of the double-edged thing that I've, because I don't know if I've been naive, but this whole time I've been doing this show for like over 10 years, and it's, to me, it's always just been the love of nostalgia. Like, that's always been the thing, and I just personally prefer, you know, these sounds and stuff like that. But it's not necessarily because I like reject modernity or whatever. It's just because, yeah, I just happen to think these things are better. My favorite movies are all from the 80s and 90s. I just think they're better,
yeah,
movies.
Yeah.
I'm less interested in like the overuse of like CGI and these sorts of things, and like, mm-hmm, in modern things that sort of just take me out of the movie. Everything feels kind of fake.
Yeah.
In the movies I like. Yeah, I like science fiction and stuff like that.
Yeah, I like a lot of that too.
But it's not like a negative thing, right? It's not like I hate the world and so I want to retreat to better times.
Yeah.
It's more just a celebration of better times. You know what I mean? It's a subtle difference in the mindset, but it definitely is something that I've been noticing now with like some of the audience where I'm like, oh, okay, I think they're coming at this thing differently than I am. Like, there's things, yeah, I can discover if I start a marketing course.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's very, very useful. I mean, it just completely changed, kind of blew my mind, because I'd been making music for quite a long time by that point, and I was just working in day jobs, you know, and doing the music on the side, and was basically depressed all of the time. And so when I actually discovered how to market the music, I was like, oh, okay. This is how you do it.
Wait, so is trial and error the key? Is it just like, I'm going to market to a bunch of ladies, and then you find out that none of them are interested, and it's like, ah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some trial and error involved, but, you know, structured trial and error. And luckily, by the time I started doing it, I actually already had some albums to sell. So one of the best ways to tell what was working is who was buying the albums, because, you know, that was actually the way I was making the money back. So, and then I did notice that it was predominantly men over 30.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. And I do, like, I do have some, you know, yeah, women fans and some younger fans, but yeah, predominantly it is men over 30.
Yep, that is the that is
this
the
makes
thing.
Sense because I'm a man over 30, so
I don't know why I always reject it. Like, I want that to not be true for some reason, but it is true. So it's like, I've always been like, oh, no, this is whatever I do with this show, this just reaches more broadly and stuff, and then ultimately it's that same demo and from particular parts of the world. And
I think it's quite comforting when you do work out your niche, your demographic, because, you know, for years I used to get quite offended if people didn't like my music. Mm. And now when people don't like my music, I don't give a shit, because I'm like, well, pretty much always they're not people that I know are in my target audience anyway. They're just people who just are not into the kind of music I make, and I don't take offense to it at all anymore. But in the past I'd always be like, why don't they like me?
Yeah. And I just sit back, well, you're not in my demo, darling.
Yeah. That's what you're not a man over 30. Yeah. It wouldn't appeal to you, darling.
Well, look, let's listen to another song here. I picked a few that I enjoyed from your album, Wolf Hours.
Oh, cool.
This is Lead You Home by Minute Taker.
When you're out in the cold, let the music lead you.
right. And that was Minute Taker with the track Lead You Home from the album Wolf Hours, which released January 2022. Is that correct?
Yes, it was actually that particular song I think I wrote in 2014, but I'm really bad at finishing things. So It didn't come out until 2022 somehow.
Well, that's cool. What does Minute Taker mean?
Well, I actually used to work in offices doing admin, and one of my jobs was a minute taker where you take minutes in meetings. Because I released my first album under my own name, and I didn't really like using my own name. And also, I always think, you know, when people use their own name, it's just not as memorable. I always forget people's names, but I'm much more likely to remember a kind of band name, you know? So I thought, I need a band name. And I was racking my brains and for ages trying to think of what to call myself. And every time I thought I found something I liked, it turned out to be like a death metal band in the Netherlands or something. So In the end, I looked at my job title. I was like, Minute Taker. I kind of like that, actually, because it kind of sounds simultaneously mundane and kind of like fantastical, like some kind of like time lord, like stealing time away or something. So I kind of thought it'd be, I don't know, a bit ironic or something to name myself after this tedious day job that I was doing. And it just kind of stuck.
What is minute taking? Like, is it taking notes during a meeting?
Yeah. So you basically record what was said. Yeah, it's as simple as that.
So what's the minute taking aspect? Is it that you write the time? Like at 8:30, John said, we need a new printer?
I don't actually know, because we never used to write the time. Never fully understood why it was called minute taking, but yeah. It just is. Often in more formal meetings, well, actually, no, it can be any type of meetings, but I used to do kind of meetings for the council and stuff. So meetings that would potentially be used in court and things like that. So you'd have to kind of pay attention and record all the points that were said.
Hold on, I just asked ChatGPT to see if it can explain to me. Oh, that just wrote me like a giant paragraph. I asked it, why is minute taking called minute taking? The term minute in this context doesn't refer to a unit of time, but rather to a written record or summary of the events, decisions, and actions taking place during the meeting.
Oh,
the term minute originated from the Latin word minuta scriptura, which translates to small writing or small notes. In this sense, minute taking essentially means writing down small notes or making a concise record.
Well, that makes sense. I didn't know that. There you go.
Now, to be fair, ChatGPT could have just lied there. That is a thing that it does. So take that with a grain of salt.
I did actually think for a second, shit, was I supposed to be writing the time of everything I wrote down? Was I doing it wrong for all of those years?
And it sounds like you were doing it correct. As I often tell like a lot of people that whenever they ask me about this, I tell them that that the term minute originated from the Latin word minuta scriptura. So what were some of these day jobs then where your life was... I was just going to say that in a cheerful voice. Tell me about the time you were depressed. That's what I was about to say. Sorry, it's early in the morning over here.
Well, to be fair, there was nothing wrong with the jobs per se. It was just that I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. You know, I just desperately wanted to make my albums and had to spend, you know, 35 hours a week sitting in an office typing. So the jobs themselves weren't bad, really. There was just lots of writing things down in child protection meetings and things like that. And yeah, I worked for the council for a while, then I worked for the arts council and did like funding meeting minutes and things like that. So yeah.
So when you were out of school,
yeah,
did any of this weird like contemporary music thing bleed into like, I like this now? Or was it just like a fun sort of side experiment? You know what I mean? Like, because obviously you make proper music. So like the whole time you were at school, were you like, why am I doing this? Or were you having fun doing it?
Yeah, I did have fun. It took me a while to get my head around it and to get into it because it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. But then I did find, even though I've never really particularly gotten into listening to contemporary music, I did find that a lot of the ideas and the techniques kind of fed into my own kind of more pop-orientated music. So it was nice to have, you know, a bit of that more experimental stuff floating around in my head to kind of channel into the more kind of pop-orientated stuff.
Do people listen to contemporary music?
Yeah, well, some people do. But, I mean, it's a bit more of a kind of high art thing, you know? I mean, I'm sure there's people who pay like a lot of money for certain contemporary music pieces, but yeah, but it is quite far removed from what I do and the music I'm interested in, really.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how that would like factor in, because I know when I was in high school and I wanted to do animation until I found out like how much work it is. And at first I wanted to do 3D animation, but then there was like a, there's good school in my province that was like, oh, that's the big one if you want to do 3D animation, but you had to take a year of classical animation first and like classical art.
Oh.
And I remember just going like, I don't want to fucking do that. But there's a reason. Obviously it's like, you know, learn to draw forms, learn to draw people properly and that sort of thing. And then that will help, you know, that'll be like a skill that helps you when you get into 3D.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think about that in terms of like, if I went into contemporary music, would there be any foundational aspect to that course that would be like, oh, but when you learn this, you can apply it here. But then I'm thinking like, yeah, can you?
There was certainly with the music technology side of it, because we did spend quite a lot of time on Cubase producing music, and I used to go in like, you know, the lunch times and stuff and produce my own non-course music, more kind of, you know, pop orientated music. So yeah, I certainly learned a lot about that. And there were certainly things that bled into it. Yeah, I got into it, I got the hang of it, and yeah, it was kind of interesting, even though it wasn't entirely what I expected it to be and what I wanted.
So is it like a lot of weirdos that take that class, or is it people like yourself who didn't read the brief?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people like me. Perhaps it wasn't quite what they were expecting. So it definitely, you know, it was useful, and I had a good time and I don't regret it, but it wasn't the most practical education I've had for my music.
Well, sometimes, you know, going to school is just like, I mean, for me, I went to like a film school and it was more just about the people I met. That was like the takeaway, because like the friends I made were like the people who gave me my first like jobs out of school. Cause like, you know, they'd end up working for some company or something. And they're like, oh, we need a guy here for a few weeks or whatever. And like, you know, give me work. And so like that was almost, and then when I would go to that job, it would be like, technically nothing I did at school trained me for this, but since I'm relatively intelligent, I can just sort of pick this up, you know, and it's more just because I had friends that gave me the job.
Yeah, and I think also as well, just doing a degree, regardless of what it's in to an extent, I think it does change the way you think and the way you approach problem solving and things. I think there are certain kind of just very transferable skills that you learn probably in any degree.
Well, see, that's a good lesson. That's what's for the youth. Stay in school.
Yeah. Also, it's really fun. Go to university. Drink a lot. It's good fun.
Well, might as well do it when you're young. I can't do that anymore. My body doesn't like it.
Yeah, same. I don't drink anymore. But yeah, back then I was out 5 nights a week or something.
See, that's what this whole scene's about, is about remembering those good times when we were young. And
but these times are good too. Those times were good, but they were also a bit of a roller coaster. You know, one minute they were amazing and then the next minute they were terrible.
That's true.
So I think there's a lot to be said for getting onto a much more even keel.
Yep. No, I do appreciate that, because I feel for most of my hobbies and stuff, it's like anytime there's any drama around me, it's just a distraction that frustrates me.
Yeah.
Like I'm not a guy who enjoys drama, because I'm just same. Like I get up and I'm just like, okay, today I gotta, like, what's my mission today? My mission today is I'm making an arcade machine. Originally it was going to be like a light gun arcade machine, you know, like where you got the guns and you shoot things.
Yeah.
But then eventually I just made it a normal arcade machine because it wasn't working. The controls I bought weren't working with the particular machine. But now I've discovered that there's this whole community of like light gun enthusiasts, and they have all these like pre-built packages. You know, you just buy it and it's got like 100 games on it and it works automatically with your light gun set and stuff. And so,
oh, cool.
That's today. So, you know, when we're done recording, I'm going to go back to researching this. And so if something dramatic happens, or I get a call from the school that my kid's been misbehaving or something, it's going to be a big frustration to me, because I want to research this video games list of light gun games and I don't want to be impeded.
Yeah, I get that. And I love the retro games as well.
Well, building an arcade machine has been really fun. I'm like 42 years old. It's the first thing out of wood I've ever made. And have you ever made anything out of wood?
I think once I made some kind of piano ruler thing out of wood when I was at university. I like cut up a ruler and made different notes out of all of them attached to a piece of wood. That was about the extent of my wood making.
What does that mean?
We had to invent an instrument. So I made one out of rulers and
I keep forgetting it's contemporary music. My instrument would have been, well, it's a fucking cinder block on a rope. And you drag it against the fucking concrete outside.
Yeah.
Give me an A. All right, let's listen to some more music. This is a track I liked. It's called Not Afraid. It's good. The vocals in this one kind of remind me a bit of like A-ha, you know, like newer A-ha stuff.
Yeah, I like A-ha. Yeah, quite a few people say that, actually.
Yeah, this song in particular, there's something about the vocal cadence. Is that the word, cadence? I don't know. That, because let's listen to it. This is this is Not Afraid by Minute Taker.
Thank you.
And that was Not Afraid by Minute Taker. And I'm here with Minute Taker right now, Ben. We are talking about contemporary music, online marketing, minute taking, day jobs, piano, piece of wood. What was it?
It was a piano made out of rulers and wood and perhaps sellotape. I can't remember.
And was it played by dragging it against concrete? I have this thing about contemporary music where it's all about concrete sounds.
That's it does often involve concrete, yeah. But no, this one didn't actually involve any building materials. Well, apart from the wood.
All right. Okay, we can move on from this topic. I'm sorry. I think back to contemporary music. I can tell it's like, why are we still talking about this? The point is that we're all having a good time. So then when you really got into the stuff, and you, was it like a big monumental day when you're like, I don't need to work this day job anymore? Like, did you feel good, or was it just sort of like a gradual kind of, I'm only going to come in 3 days a week and then 2 days a week? Well, or did you do like a hard, like bold decision?
I did do a transition. I think I went down to 3 days a week for about maybe less than a year. Mm. And then eventually I was like, you know what? I'm going to make this work. So it was a big relief, because it just felt like it was going on forever, you know, because I left uni in my early 20s. And I think by the, it wasn't until like my mid 30s that I left, you know, left to go full-time music after years of, you know, it wasn't like I was just coasting along and doing a bit of music. I was like working on it constantly and like trying, getting people would come out the woodwork, like record deals and managers and things. And then they'd kind of fall by the wayside. And then it was always like, oh my God, it's finally happening. And then it would be like, oh my God, it's not happening. So for years, so after learning, when I learned how to do it all myself and just kind of make music myself from it all, I was like, this is so much better, because I don't have to rely on other people. I can just do it.
Is there other people involved, like in production stuff or like other things, or are you the main force?
Yeah, I do the writing and production. For the last couple of years, I've been working with a mix engineer called Matt Aslanian, who's over in Texas. He mixed most of my Wolfhouse album, and he's mixing most of my new album. Yeah, because part of the problem I have is because I do it all myself, I was just finding it very, very difficult to finish songs, because it's just so difficult to get it to the point where you're like, okay, it's finished. I would just be like, oh, I need to go down this other rabbit hole of things I can try. And I've really found that having somebody else to mix it just helps me to draw a line under it. Also, it just makes it sound better, because it's, you know, an experienced mixing engineer just to actually take what I've done and just make it sound a bit better. So yeah, I'm really enjoying just kind of getting it as far as I can, and then kind of handing it over to somebody else to finish it. And then there's a bit of back and forth, you know, in terms of mix revisions and things. But yeah, it's much better, and it's definitely getting me getting my songs out there quicker.
So as we were recording, there was a bunch of dogs that were barking. So do you record your music at home?
Yeah,
like your vocals, or do you go to a place?
Yeah, I record at home where I am now, just in my upstairs. I've got a cat sitting on my knee as we speak. I've shut the door, the dog's downstairs. Yeah, the ambient noise from animals can sometimes be a problem. I often have to take off one of my cat's collars when I'm recording, because the bell jingles.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have to put the biscuits upstairs. You'd be like, what's that noise on the mic? It's like, gosh, gosh, and you realise one of them's just chomping away on the biscuits.
Wait, how many cats are over there?
Oh, I've got two cats and a dog. I did have another dog. She died a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
But yeah, so I'm down to three animals now.
That sounds like quite a hectic sort of thing.
Yeah, it's nice. So I just love having animals around me and keep me coming, especially because I'm in the house all day long, apart from taking the dogs out and popping out to meet friends and stuff sometimes. So, you know, it's just really nice to have, you know, the animals around to keep me entertained.
Do they all get along?
Well, the dog gives the cats a bit of a hard time. He chases them and yeah, they kind of hiss at him, you know. It's just kind of a daily occurrence. But they they're okay together. Like, they tolerate each other. The two cats get on pretty well with each other.
Well, that's good. We got two now, and it's funny because they're like a similar breed. So I've got these big fluffy orange flat face kind of Persian cats.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh nice.
And they got these funny ass faces. Like, the reason why we got both of them was because we'd see like this ad, you know, where people were giving away kittens or whatever, and like both times with both cats we just see this picture, and it's like the funniest. They have like the funniest faces. And so I've never had animals like this before where we just like look at them all the time. Like, we just sit around just looking at our cats just because they're so fun to look at. Like, 'cause
yeah,
my old cats were like normal looking tabby cats, but these ones, like, we just sort of baby these ones in a way that I didn't with the the cats that I had when I was young.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
But the way that they interact is really funny because, like, they literally look very similar to each other. So I just thought they would get along because they looked the same, which I guess is not the way things work. It's like some weird internal, like, cat racism thing I just assumed, where I'm like, oh, they'll like each other. They look the same. But Chester was not happy when we got Johnny Gizmo, and he, like, threw up. He just saw the kitten and then just threw up.
Like, yeah, they often tend to like being the only cat in the house, I think. I think we always think, oh, it'd be nice for them to have company, but I think often they're happier just by themselves, really.
Well, definitely it changed the vibe, because Chester was young when we got him, and then literally it's been like, I don't know, a year and a half. Was it even 2 years when we got Johnny? But now Chester feels like an old man compared to, because the kitten's got so much energy. Yeah, and so anytime Chester's like laying on the bed and then all of a sudden Johnny jumps on him, and then it's like some old man being like pestered by a kid. But the other day something weird happened, because I thought these guys know each other, right? They hang out in the house every day. We haven't let the young kitten outside yet, because we're going to give them a microchip or whatever, but because we let them outside and we live in a small town, and like the radius that Chester goes, he walks quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So I found out, like, I don't know what it's like when people like have someone cheat on them, but like, you know, Chester will come back and like smell like perfume and stuff. So like he's going off to other people's houses and like hanging out with other people. So it's always nice to make sure, just in case, you know, they get lost or whatever, because they can cover a wide area. Anyway, the point is, the other day I let Johnny out for the first time, and then Chester like didn't recognize him when they were outside. Like he like got his back up and started hissing at him like he was a different cat. And I'm like, dude, it's the same fucking cat. Like, you guys live with each other. Like, you're in the same room with each other all the time. But, like, literally the context made Chester not recognize him, because he wasn't used to seeing him outdoors. Yeah. And since they didn't walk out together, so the second he saw him, he's just like, he's hissing and his back is up. And unless he was just pissed off that he was outside and he thought that was his thing. And just like, no, this is my place. I don't know.
Yeah, they're funny creatures, aren't they?
I love when I just talk for too long and then realize that there's like nothing anyone can add to what I just said. The point is, we all love animals.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta have animals.
So that's the thing. I guess you don't have to walk your cats, right?
No. I did try to walk them when they were younger, because I was a bit nervous about letting them outside because they're by a road. So I tried taking them just around the garden on a harness, but it just doesn't work, because they just kind of roll on their back. And then you have to kind of drag them. They don't seem to get it. So yeah, it's kind of, now one of them goes out and the other one doesn't really bother.
Do you live like in a small like town, or like, is it a city?
Yeah, it's a town. It's like an old industrial town with lots of hills. Yeah, but the road I just happen to live on, the busiest road in the town, annoyingly. So like the back's nice and chilled out with the garden and stuff, but then the front's a road. So, but the cats just don't go near the road, luckily.
I looked into getting those cameras, because there's like some Instagrams I follow where they put a little camera on their cat's collar.
Yeah.
And you can see where they go.
Yeah,
I think that would be so fun, but the camera those people use is like $500.
You just get a tracker, then just a GPS tracker. I used to have one actually for the dogs when I was, and sometimes I put it on the cat just to see where they go. You can just see their little wander around the area.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm curious. I've always been interested, just like, what is his route exactly? I didn't think about the privacy issue, because like, I was like, wait a second, if you put a camera on your cat, what happens if they go into somebody else's house? Or they're in someone else's backyard and some guy's like yelling at his wife or something, and the cat's just like watching them. I'm just like, did I just record like some domestic thing? You know what I mean? Like, because it just looks so much fun when you watch the Instagram videos of, look at the cat climb the tree. I'm like, what if this cat looks in someone's window and catches like an affair or something? Like, then what?
That could be a very good premise for a film.
I was thinking that.
Yeah.
It's a Rear Window type thing where like the cat captures like a crime on the thing, and then and then the owner like doesn't even watch the footage for like a few weeks and then realizes that they have the evidence for a crime.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's work on that.
I didn't actually know you could get cat cameras. I've not seen those.
Well, they're not necessarily cat cameras. They are like the slimmest GoPros you can get.
Yeah.
I don't even think it's GoPro. It's a different company, but they basically make a camera that is portable enough that you can put it on a collar, but they're still big. It's weird. It's like everyone's always like, oh, like everything's got cameras in it. But then when it comes time to put a camera on a cat, all of a sudden the thing, it's like a little barbell or something. It's like this giant cube. It's interesting to me that they can't get them smaller.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to listen to another song? Let's listen to 500 Breakups. How about that?
Cool.
And then we'll keep talking. This is 500 Breakups by Minute Taker. And that was Minute Taker with the track 500 Breakups. And that's a good one from the album Wolf Hours. I'm here with Minute Taker right now. Ben, he's just been talking my ear off about cats and cat cameras. And I'm just sitting here patiently waiting where I can join the conversation somehow. So that's what's been, what's been going on here. So what's tell me about your process. How about we talk about music making for a while? Do you have a little book where you write down poems that you turn into songs, or do you just like to hear the melodies and have the words come to you? Is there specific themes you like?
I did actually used to carry a little notepad around with me back in the olden days for lyric ideas and things like that, and I used to have a dictaphone to record the melodies, but now I just do it all on my phone and got on the voice recorder app and the notes app. Yeah, I tend to get most of my ideas first thing in the morning. I wake up with either I've heard a song in a dream, or it's just kind of in my head when I wake up for some reason, and then I just kind of mumble it into my voice recorder as best I can with my gruff morning voice, and then later kind of listen back to them and go, what the hell is that? But every now and then a good one pops out. Yeah, so I tend to start with the melodies. Often I just sing gibberish lyrics at first, and then some of the lyrics stick, and then I start kind of writing the lyrics properly. So yeah, and then sometimes I just get ideas for lyrics just by themselves, and I just write those down, and I try not to kind of overthink it. I've always just let it happen, you know. I never really sit down and try to write a song. They just seem to happen.
And then you wait till you have like 11 or so to collect, and then you're like, now I've got an album.
Yeah, well, over recent years, actually, I've got much more into the habit of recording, writing, and producing them all at the same time, you know. So as soon as I've got like an idea for a riff or a melody or something, I just go into Cubase and start layering it up, and then kind of, you know, putting the beats and the synths and things, and then I'll sing the melodies into it with the gibberish lyrics, and then I'll start, as I go along, I'll kind of replace the gibberish lyrics with the proper lyrics, and yeah, so I kind of just built it all that way, so all those parts of the process have just kind of bled into one, really. Then sometimes as well, I still do sometimes just write completely at the piano, especially kind of the more slower songs, ballady songs. Yeah, but quite often they just kind of pop out in the space of a couple of hours, really. I'll just sit at the computer with an idea, and then I've got the, 90% of a song, and then often take about 5 years to do that final 10% of it.
So then what's changed between now and like with the music you sort of used to make? Because the genre's kind of shifted a bit. What changed in your brain or in your process during that time?
I think whatever music I make is always kind of reflective of the music I'm listening to at the time. So, you know, it just naturally just evolves between albums. I've had 3 albums and a few EPs now. I've always been into 80s music. I was a teenager in the 90s, and I was very into 80s music then when it was really uncool. So I had to kind of be a bit secretive about it. And and yes, I've always loved a lot of the 80s stuff. And yeah, and in recent years, I've just seemed to have just gravitated more and more towards it and towards synthwave. And yes, that's really kind of just fed into the music I was creating, really.
Yeah, I guess I was the same way, because even though I grew up in the 80s, obviously it's not until you're sort of a teenager that you start to kind of like form really your own tastes and stuff like that. And so someone introduced me to like Depeche Mode, and so it's like mostly in the 90s I was listening to 80s Depeche Mode in the 90s, and that was kind of what I was doing. That was sort of like forming my musical taste. And so I wasn't even listening to the albums in order, you know, like it was just basically like it was back in the day when someone just gives you a tape. You just have a tape, and
yeah, you just gotta take what you've got.
No Wikipedia or whatever. So I didn't realize, like, wait a second, like this Black Celebration album actually came out before fucking Violate or whatever. Like, I didn't know. I just was just listening to them as it was like all just one thing.
I was the same. I used to go around the car boot sales in the 90s, because you'd get so many of the 80s records for like really, really cheap, like 50p or something. And, you know, I built up, my records and CDs and tapes and videos, you know, like concert films and things. And yeah, I used to go around all of the secondhand record shops looking for like the singles, so I'd have the B-sides, you know, because it's not like now where you can just go on YouTube and listen to them. Like, the only way to hear those B-sides would be to actually get hold of the 7-inch single or the CD single.
There was a fun to the quest.
Yeah, definitely.
If I went to a different city or town and they had a music store, there was the possibility that you would find different things.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's sort of gone now. I don't know if it's better or worse. Like, I mean, but there was something fun about it. Like, it was like an adventure.
Yeah, I kind of miss those days. Although, I mean, it is amazing basically having everything at the touch of a button and being able to listen to most random things you could think of you could probably just find online. But it was really nice just having to go to those lengths to find more, especially more obscure stuff, you know, and just like B-sides and remixes and things. And to be like, it just felt like such an achievement when you found that, you know, that rare single or something that you've been looking for, and you got access to like a whole different song that, you know, was left off one of your favorite albums.
I would love to go back in time to that point where, you know, just that thing that you like is at its least valuable in terms of money, like at these, like the yard sales and stuff. Because I talk about this all the time, but like when I was like collecting like Lego, there's a period of time where Lego just was not like super valued, and you could go to yard sales and people were like selling buckets, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
for cheap. But then now it's like anything, since all the retro scene and all the nostalgia scenes are so big, everyone sort of understands the value of their retro stuff. So now it's like, if you go to those sort of shops now, it's like, oh, retro video games, or you can buy an N64 for like $200 or something. I'm like, dude, there's a time where people were fucking giving these away. Like, you know, and like now it's like, since it's a big scene, so now you got to pay all this extra money. And it just makes me think about the time that I sold all of that stuff to some guy for like $180, like all my retro systems and games. And like, that guy's making a killing now off my shit.
Yeah, same. I used to actually go around to car boot sales and pick up all the consoles. For like, I used to get, I'd get like a couple of Mega Drives for like a fiver and then just like sell them to the game shop for like 20 quid or something. I used to have a little, it was my little sideline. I think I had about 5 Mega Drives at one point and probably like 5 SNESs as well.
You can't do that anymore because they all, now it's cool to get those things. And
I should have like put them all in a big hole somewhere. They'd be worth a lot now. I could have had like about 100 NESs and Game Boys and Mega Drives and all sorts.
I know, that's the thing too. And if I knew how to fix them, that would be the key, especially like old Game Boys.
Yeah,
because old Game Boys had that stupid thing where like the pixels started to like go away at the sides.
Yeah,
and you'd like turn on an old one and like it's like missing like this big chunk like of just the picture. But it turns out that problem in particular was like, it's not hard to solve, but I'm good at taking apart electronics and smashing them, but I've never been good at like knowing what the things do. And I guess with the Game Boy, all it is just you crack it open and then you just have to like put the, there's like a kind of like a backing sort of tinfoil-y type material that you just have to like push back down, because I guess it would like separate from the
They were chunky things as well, weren't they, Game Boys?
Oh yeah,
and they were pretty primitive. Really. I mean, what was the Sega version of the Game Boy? There was the that never really took off as much. I can't think what it's called.
That was the Game Gear.
Yeah, and that was the superior, I think, wasn't it? And it was in color, but for some reason, it never really took off in the same way as the Game Boy. I always had the Game Boy.
You know what it was? It was the battery life, and the screen had a really bad like viewing angle.
Right.
Because I remember I had a friend who had one. If you did not look at that screen dead on straight, it looked really shitty. Like if you looked at it from the sides, but also it took 6 batteries and it would last for like an hour or two or something.
Oh, right.
It was ridiculous. Whereas like the Game Boy took 4 and actually lasted for quite a while with those 4 batteries.
God, yeah, you forget about all these things, don't you? All of these issues. You just, it's so easy now, because if I play games now, it's just on my phone, and if the battery starts going, you just plug it in and keep going.
Yep. Yeah, and now we got the magic of lithium ion technology.
Yeah.
That's the batteries. That's the, that's the new ones.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Well, look, let's listen to, we can probably wind down. We've been talking for a while. How about we listen to the other track you did with Walter Alienson,
sure.
which is good. It's called Neon Lions. And let's listen to that, and then we'll keep chatting. This is Neon Lions by Walter Alienson and Minute Taker. And that was Neon Lines by Walter Alienson and Miniot tells you what to call you. Minute Taker. Miniot. Minute Taker. And I'm here with Minute Taker right now, Ben.
Hello.
So yeah, man, what's, is there anything we didn't talk about that you want to talk about? I know there's a bunch of stuff we talked about that you didn't want to talk about, but like, what's something you want to talk about? The floor is yours before I hang up on you.
I can't think of anything.
What do you like to do? You like watching movies, TV?
Yeah, I watch a lot of TV. Yeah, I watch a lot of Netflix and I love a good thriller. And certainly anything set in the 80s. I watch a lot of 80s movies and sitcoms and things. And yeah, I listen to a lot of records. I've got my front room is just kind of the record room where I just sit and actually... You know, sit and enjoy a record, which I think is nice, you know, because I listen to music like a lot of the time when I'm working and walking the dogs and stuff, but it's nice to actually put a record on and properly sit and listen to it and read, you know, look at the artwork and read the lyrics and things.
That's fun. That's something I don't do.
I'd recommend it.
It's like I listen to music like it's a job. It's been a long time since I just like sat in a comfortable chair and just listened.
Yeah, it's a different experience. I think it's you kind of appreciate it more, kind of like we were talking about, like back in the day, the way you appreciated music in a different way. It's a bit like that, because it kind of just comes down to actually putting it on the turntable and letting it spin and, you know, picking up the sleeve and enjoy it.
The cats never fuck up the record collection or like run on that shelf and knock things over?
Well, they're not really allowed in that room. it's a no cat room. Yeah, because I don't trust them. Yeah, because they do sometimes as well. They do tend to go for that stylus, you know, when they see the record spinning, they think it's a bit of a game and they try and like, you know, get their claws into it. So it's not recommended.
I wonder if a cat's claw rubbed against the record, if like sound would reverberate off their nails.
I don't know.
Well, because you know perhaps. That thing, right? Like, have you ever done that experiment?
With a cat claw?
Like, it breaks records, but, you know, if you take a toothpick and then you cut a slice into the toothpick and put, like, a piece of paper, if you put the toothpick against a record while it's spinning, you'll actually hear the music come off the paper.
I did not know that.
It's like the grooves, it sends the sound wave up the thing, and that's why, like, the record player has that pin, because it's the pin that's, like, whatever, it accepts the wave of sound. I don't know how it works, but if you take a fucking toothpick and do that same thing, you'll actually hear the music, and the paper acts as the speaker, sort of, but it, like, destroys the record in the process, so that's why I asked that weird question, because if a cat's nail touched the record, I wonder if, like, the sound wave would...
I'll have to try it. I'll take my cat down to the front room now and we'll have a go. Maybe pick one of my least favorite albums.
Yeah. See if like music like comes out of the cat's mouth. Like it opens its mouth.
Yeah. Oh my God, that would go viral. I'll have to set the camera up.
That's true, but no one would believe it. They'd be like, this is fucking AI, man.
Yeah.
It's fake. That's the voice of the person too. Has there been anything lately that you've been like, that was a really good show, I hope more people watch that?
Do you know, I watch so much that I forget. And then actually what I've started doing lately is when they release like the second or third series or something that I remember I liked, I just kind of watch it again from the start because my memory is so bad. I'm like, well, I remember I liked that, but I can't actually remember what happens. So I've done that a few times. I've just started watching Cobra Kai again because I did watch that a few years ago and then thought, oh, I might as well just watch it again from the start and then watch the series that have come out since I last watched it.
I think I'm several seasons behind on that.
Yeah, I don't know where I got up to.
I watched the first few. Like, I enjoyed it. It's cheesy fun.
Yeah, I've just got to series two again. I can't remember where I got up to last time. Maybe series three or four.
I think that's where I did I see season four?
Did you see the series when Elizabeth Shue came back?
Yes, but that's three, right? Was that three?
Yeah, I think that's three. I think that was the last one I watched, so I'm probably, I need to, once I get to the end of series three, I'll be ready to go into the ones I haven't actually seen before. Not that I can remember much anyway.
Yeah, I'm way behind. I find myself, I'm always just kind of disappointed by everything now, so there's a few things, like honestly, the show that I got the most excited for in recent years was called Severance.
Oh yeah, I watched that. Yeah, that was very good. I was addicted to that.
That show was fucking awesome. I really liked it, and it has like the best season finale I've seen in a long time, and I'm just worried that they're not going to be able to maintain the level of quality like once that show comes back.
It's often the way, isn't it? Because you often find things have a great first season, really well structured.
Yes.
And then they kind of, because it's a hit, they obviously renew it, and then they do a second and third series, and it just kind of gets progressively less good.
Yeah, like I can't think of a single, because like even some of my favorite shows, they always seem to peak at like if it's a show that runs for a long time, you know, the fans will always be like, you know, well, season 3 and 4 were the best or whatever. Like, it's always that sort of a thing. I can't think of an example where the best season was the last season.
Yeah, it's kind of like movie sequels, isn't it? Like, perhaps apart from Terminator and Alien, pretty much everything after the first one is not as good as the first.
No. I mean, I guess sort of a matter of taste. Like, I know there's some people who like the third Indiana Jones movie. I personally think the first one's the best.
I'd probably go for Temple of Doom, not the second one, wouldn't it?
Oh, you're one of those.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite.
Interesting.
They're all good, though, those three. I couldn't get into the more recent ones.
No. I'm like that with a lot of things, though. This is my, like, curmudgeonly side now. You know, when we started this conversation, it was about, like, oh, I love the old, you know, it's all about embracing the love of the old things. But then I do appreciate why people aren't as keen on modern like movies, yeah, and TV. Like, I'm a big Doctor Who fan, but I'm like a fan of the old show, like the 70s and...
Yeah, it's been going for a long time. I think I used to watch it, yeah, back in the 80s, but haven't really watched it since then.
Yeah, it's just a very different thing now. It's more like relationship dramas and things, and I just like, personally, just straightforward adventure storytelling things, you know? But
yeah,
at the same time, it's like, that's why as I get older, I'm just thinking, like, maybe it's just because I'm older that I should be watching, like... Poirot and shit, you know? That's like, my time has come where maybe, like, I just have to put aside childish things and watch Poirot specifically. You ever watch Poirot?
No, I used to read a lot of Agatha Christie. I do like a good whodunit. No, I never really got into watching the shows. I do generally like kind of mystery thrillers and dramas and things, but I like a good mystery. Yeah, I like a lot of kind of thrillers that kind of supposed tend to be quite dark, you know, like detective things and stuff.
Are you like murders?
Yeah, not per se. Like, I'm not a fan of committing question. Them.
Yeah.
I think it's because I like a good mystery, and often they do involve murders.
Yeah. How do you feel about French protagonists with the, like, kind of swirly mustaches?
Yes, I've read, yeah, quite a few of the books, the Poirot books, but yeah, I never really got into watching the TV adaptations as much for some reason.
I've never watched Poirot. I just think, I haven't said that word out loud, so it's just fun to say now.
It's a hard word to say.
Yeah, I mean, I know the, like, the picture, because I would, like, watch, like, BBC things, and, like, they would always advertise Poirot, and then it's like, there's Poirot, get a mustache.
I like a lot of comedies as well. Like, I just started watching Silicon Valley again. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, that was a funny show.
I love that one, yeah.
I don't think I actually finished it, though, now that I think about it. I think I just watched the first few seasons, but it really made me laugh. That first season where the one guy, like, punches the kid.
Yeah, it's really funny.
That scene was so funny. And the finale, which I don't think they ever topped, but that thing where they were doing the mathematical equation for the blowjobs or whatever.
Yeah, I remember. And they were all, like, writing on the whiteboards, but then they actually stumbled across some solution while they were doing it.
Yeah, that was I remember that scene just blew my mind. It's like, this is such a really well written but, like, super funny, but also, like, I don't know, like, that was it was a cool show.
Yeah,
anyway, I gotta get caught up on all these things. Maybe that's the problem, is I keep on wanting things, like, you know, I'm a fan of, like, Star Wars and stuff, and, you know, so I keep on going, oh, maybe the next Star Wars thing will be good, and they always end up being disappointing, like the new ones. And meanwhile, there's all these old things that I should be watching that people have been telling me to watch for, like, decades, you know, like, have you seen this yet, or this movie? And I'm like, no. But then I'll keep putting myself through watching mediocre, annoying things.
Yeah.
And then I should just finally watch all those things that people have been telling me to watch for years.
Have you ever watched that show, Halt and Catch Fire?
Okay, no, but I've watched the title sequence a lot. I love that title sequence.
I really love this. It's one of my favorite series of recent years. And I think I like it even more because it's kind of, it's a bit more obscure, and a lot of people don't seem to know about it, but I really enjoyed it. In fact, I think I watched, when I finished it, I ended up going back to the start and watching at least the first season again. It's just very good, especially if you like things to do with tech in the 80s and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, maybe I'll go back to that one. I just love the title sequence.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Because I think one of the videos I would watch was the opening scene of the first episode and then accompanied by the title sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still have no context for it. It was like some blonde lady who gets mad because she sleeps with Lee Pace, and then I guess he dismisses her or something. That was like the opening moment, and then, like, and she gets pissed off and then just fucking starts the title sequence. And I'm like, man, Lee Pace is a cool guy. That's what I was thinking. He's like a womanizer or something. If that's even where the show goes, I don't know. Maybe
I can't remember now. I just remember really liking it, and it being about, you know, like kind of, yeah, setting up computer companies in the garage and in the 80s and stuff. And yeah, it's very good. It's kind of dark as well, but yeah, I thought it was one of my favorites.
Is it ever as cool as that title sequence?
Yeah, I think so. I'm struggling to remember it. I always just remember that I really like things, and then often I can just rewatch them because I actually forget every single, apart from the fact that I liked it, I just forget everything about it. It's quite useful,
cool.
Really.
That
memory's so bad.
Then you get to go back and watch it again and like experience the fun.
And I'm still surprised, which is crazy. Like if there's like a twist, I'll still be like really shocked. I'll be like, how did I not remember that?
They set off a bomb.
I think it's just because, you know, when you end up, there's just so much now, you know, because it's like back in the day, you know, you would find a series you liked on TV and you'd be waiting for it every week and you'd be setting the video of you out. And, you know, there was such a limited amount available. But now it's just like you find something, you watch like 4 seasons of it, and then you move on to something else and you watch 5 seasons of that. And then it's just binge watching culture, isn't it?
Yeah, it's too much. It's like I feel the same way with video games. Like I go through the, because a lot of the game companies now, they have these like streaming options if you have like a PlayStation or Xbox, and there's just so many games in the list that then I just can't make a decision. And I mean, it's the same with this stupid arcade I'm building because it's got like thousands of games on it, and so you just sit there flipping through the list. I do the same thing with Netflix. I like most of my Netflix experience is the list looking at.
Yeah, and now I often have to be really strict with myself, because the amount of times I've sat down to watch a film and basically spent an hour flicking through the trailers and the descriptions of films. And so now I'm just like, as soon as I find something that looks remotely interesting, I just put it on. And then I think, well, if I don't like it, I'll switch it off for 10 minutes. Otherwise, I just spend the whole time scrolling.
Yeah. But a lot of the things that are my favorite movies now, or music, was just because when I was young, I didn't have anything else.
Yeah.
So it's like I had these 3 Depeche Mode tapes, and so I just listened to those all the time because those are my 3 tapes I had. You know, like the movies I owned on VHS and DVD. It's like, you know, there's maybe like 15 movies or something, you know, on VHS that I would have on my shelf, and so I would just watch them all the time. And
yeah, that's what it was like back then. And then, and I remember if ever I was off sick from work, it'd be like, you know, there'd be about like 20 DVDs in my collection. I'd be like, right, well, which one shall I rewatch? You know, she just didn't.
Yeah.
Unless you could be bothered to go out to the video shop, you know.
Yeah, the amount of movies I used to rewatch, I don't do that anymore. Like, I used to have movies on, like, a rotation.
Yeah.
Like, not an official rotation, but just it was like, oh, it feels like it's been, like, a year. Time to watch Scarface. Time to watch these and this and that. And now I barely sit down to watch movies. And, well, whatever. There's lots of things going on. You know, like, I got kids. I got cats. Cats running about making a mess. You know, if you have like, are your cats short hair?
Yeah.
Because I learned some lessons because I got a fluffy cats. They do require a bit more maintenance than I was aware of.
Yeah, I'm quite allergic to cats, so I have to kind of pick wisely. I have to take antihistamines every day or they make me sneeze. But
what?
Yeah, because, and I did a bit of research into the breeds that are better for allergies, so and I couldn't afford the pedigree one, so I just kind of got half breeds that were kind of breeds that were at least half of them was a breed that was a bit more hypoallergenic.
Oh.
And the females are better than the males for allergies, apparently. Yeah, so I got 2 females.
That's interesting. Oh yeah, because I've got 2 fluffy male cats.
Yeah, I'd be sneezing my head off at your house.
Yeah. They're very fluffy and they make a mess because stuff gets stuck in the fur.
Yeah, that's the thing. My old dog was long-haired and yeah, does require a little bit more maintenance.
It's funny, it's like I never knew that would be a thing. We almost have to baby these cats more than our own kids. It doesn't seem we go by more than 3 days with the cat going like, oh, they got litter stuck in their fur, and then my wife's got to fucking hold the cat, and I've got like this hose like cleaning the stuff. It's ridiculous. Anyway, well, look, man, listen, it was fun chatting. I should probably let you go here. You got to go make music. I'm an impedance. It's not impedance, no, because that sounds too close to it.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
No. What am I trying to say? Listen here, Ben, I'm impotent, all right? Go make music.
I'll leave you to it.
No, I don't want to be an impedance to your day, right? Because you got to go, you got a little notepad, music to write, things to sing, albums to work on.
Yeah, I suppose. Better check my emails.
Yeah.
Most of my time seems to be admin orientated rather than music making.
Hey man, well that's you got the perfect training being a minute taker. You did it.
Yeah, I got to do my own admin now.
Yeah.
Living the dream.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, it was good talking to you. Is there anything you want to say before I hang up on you?
No. Just thanks very much for having me on. And yeah, it's been fun.
And people should go check out Minute Taker. They can find your music on Bandcamp. And it sounds like there's a new album coming at some point.
Yeah, this year, hopefully. I don't actually use Bandcamp much these days, but I'm on, you know, Spotify and all the usuals.
Okay. Well, then what if someone wants to own the music that they buy from you?
Oh, they just go. I've got a shop, which is minutetakershop.com, where it's like it's my Shopify site where I sell my records and CDs and downloads and things.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, I did used to use Bandcamp, but a few years ago I moved over to Shopify. So just more options in terms of the layout and kind of plugins and stuff and having it connect with the Facebook ads and things like that.
Interesting. So you are an entrepreneur.
I guess. Of sorts. I try.
All right. Well, cool, man. Well, listen, it was fun talking to you.
You too.
And keep on making cool music, and we'll play it on the show. And I look forward to hearing your new album later in the year.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Take care, man.
Yeah, you too.
All right, that was my conversation with Minute Taker. As always, I want to thank the awesome patrons who make Beyond Synth possible, like Emil and Randy and Honeybeard and A Star Apart and Alex Seligson and Ken Giroux and Neverman, Restless Nights and Robot Conglomerate and Tron Javolta, Waylon Kasky Geospatial, Zach, your friendly neighborhood raccoon Petey, and of course the Kings, Mike Shima, Mike Erdahl, Brandon Decker, Tiber83. You're all awesome. And don't forget, if you go to the Patreon right now, you can listen to the pilot episode of Mike and Andy's Radio Fiasco as a Patreon exclusive. And I'm still doing a call to action for listeners to leave a 5-star review on iTunes and say whatever you want in the paragraph and I will read it. I have received a bunch and I'll probably read them on either when I do Radio Fiasco with Mike or Marco and Andy Power Hour. And I have received a whole bunch actually, so this is cool. So I'll have a bunch to read, and that's for you. So if you want to do that, the only thing I will say is, for some reason, iTunes doesn't let me see all the reviews. You have to sort it by country, and you have to manually put what country you want to see in. So it's very silly, because if someone leaves a review from Belgium, I will have no idea unless I actually click on Belgium. So if you leave me a review and you are not from either the US, England, Canada, because that's where my thing defaults, then feel free to send me a message on Patreon or, you know, at beyondsynth@gmail.com and just let me know that you left a review so I can go and check it out. Because, you know, if someone leaves a review from Zimbabwe, I'm never going to know. And that, I think, is everything. So thanks for listening to the show. Tune in next time to Beyond Synth, the best synthwave chat show there is. And thank you for supporting the show and being cool. And that's all I got. So I will talk to you next time on Beyond Synth.
Beyond Synth Radio is produced by Andy Last. Check the show notes for more information on the musicians featured on the show. Consider supporting Beyond Synth at patreon.com/beyondsynth. Thanks for listening.